We'll get started. So I'm really delighted to welcome Deborah Armour here to Ledbury. Deborah's been many times as the emergency poet during the festival, which has been absolutely wonderful part of the festival. If you haven't visited her in her 1970s ambulance, come hopefully next festival and you can do that. She says the idea came to her as a fun way to bring poetry to people, and it really does. It's so eye-catching. I think it draws people in. And Deborah has recently edited The Emergency Poet, an anti-stress anthology, and The Everyday Poet, Poems to Live By, and we've got copies of both at the back, and we'll be having book signing afterwards. Deborah has read at Ledbury before as part of an event with Jean Atkin and Myra Schneider a few years ago. That was a great event. And you were born in North London. Deborah has an MA in creative writing from Keele University and works with people with dementia. And Deborah's done that as part of the festival as well. So we've had a partnership with the Courtyard, and that was a really great project. Deborah also teaches creative writing, and her biography says that you're half Indian and live in Paris. So Deborah Armour's debut pamphlet is True Tales of the Countryside, published by Emma Press, really super press, I think. Mm-hmm. And when asked what she would most like to achieve with her pamphlet, she says, and I found this on her website, I think I would most enjoy the gift of beginning to like the sound of my own voice. I'm only sharing this because I did find it a really lovely, I thought, and I wanted to ask you about that. The writing of poems came from somewhere different, but seeing them in print is like singing in public. Brave for me. And I felt a lot of people will chime with that, yes, because absolutely. It is this question which I wanted to ask you about create, you know, being a, you know, being creative writing, and the two areas of it, the sort of private thing and the public thing, and just to ask you to talk a little bit about what kind of courage you needed to find to start writing and publishing.
Yeah, well, I found that there's no courage to write at all. Yeah. You know, that's an easy process, and it's just you and the pen and the page. The difficult thing for me, and it's not true of every poet, is it, is to imagine that they might be anywhere near good enough for other people to read them or to share them. And it's a great thing to write and to have that kind of creative impulse. And then there's also the part of me that dresses up as a doctor with nurse first and has an ambulance and is quite comfortable in front of people. But my own writing is another thing altogether. It is difficult and it is quite a brave thing. And also you risk rejection, don't you, when you put your poetry out there. So that's brave as well.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of people, you go through stages in your development as a poet, don't you, between writing privately but then perhaps going to workshops or being in more formal situation. Mm-hmm. Did you do any of that, or was it, how did you kind of start writing, or what was the...
I wrote that kind of teenage angst stuff, I think, which lots of us do, and it's absolutely terrible. And then I did a degree in English and creative writing in my 40s at Birmingham University, and I went there thinking I was going to write a novel, actually, but I had young children at the time, and I found that poetry was easier when I didn't have much time, because I was working as well and a single parent, and you could finish something. So I discovered that I was a poet, even though I'd been reading poetry. I discovered that
yes, you are.
That I like writing poetry, but most of all reading poetry.
Yeah.
But I didn't go to workshops. I was doing the degree, and then I went straight into an MA because I enjoyed that external discipline of somebody else looking at the work and having to deliver something. And now I hardly write at all because I have no discipline, no self-discipline.
So what about in your sort of childhood years then? Were there many books around the house, or did you have much opportunity to read?
No, I'm a North London council estate girl. If I talk like where I come from, it's like, you know, so I've kind of softened my vowel sounds by moving to Shropshire, and there was no poetry around. It was considered poncy, and if you said you liked poetry, you'd probably get your head kicked in or something. You know. But my grandmother liked poetry, and also I think most children at primary school are open and receptive to poetry, aren't they? And then I was a bookseller, and then I worked for a publisher, so I've been a reader for all my life, so I think it came from that.
Mm. And so, I mean, I would like to ask you about people who inspired you and who you would sort of see as key poets for yourself as you became a just that one.
It's funny actually, because that's one of the questions I ask people in the ambulance, poets they love. And because I love so many, I've put books together and shared lots of poetry with people, but I did this. I was frightened. I was flying to New Zealand, and it was a really bumpy flight, and I was frightened, and I thought, I'm going to go through all my poetry books and decide which was my favourite, you know, by sort of a process of elimination. And it was Louis McNeice was the one I was left with, I think. Do you agree with that? And then he was the one I couldn't.
And why then? What is it about Louis McNeice for you then? And we can go on to see if people can.
Does anyone know that poem Snow? Do you know Snow? And that kind of sums up why I love him, because he's mysterious and difficult, and they're not quite about, they're about so many things. The language is beautiful.
Other poem of his that I love just as much as Snow is
Entirely. Yes, I think it's in one of those. Well, I prescribe it anyway. And Wolves as well. Have you read that?
That's the thing.
That's the thing.
Could you read your Snow then?
I could read you Snow. I thought maybe. Is it in there? Could I? For each of these, I had a budget, and some poems are really expensive. No, it is in here. My memory is terrible. Snow.
To a background of something giant.
Yes. It's the right time of year to be thinking about.
Snow. The room was suddenly rich, and the great bay window was spawning snow and pink roses against it, soundlessly collateral and incompatible. World is suddener than we fancy it. World is crazier and more of it than we think. Excuse me. Incorrigibly plural, I peel and portion a tangerine and spit the pips and feel the drunkenness of things being various, and the fire flames with a bubbling sound, for world is more spiteful and gay than one supposes, on the tongue, on the eyes, on the ears, in the palms of your hands, there is more than glass between the snow and the huge roses. It's beautiful, isn't it? But it's, I'm not quite sure what it's about, this mysterious poem.
Thank you, that was lovely. And so to True Tales of the Countryside, I mean, what I did love about this title is True Tales, you know, this feeling of, because it feels like a very honest pamphlet.
Kind of. So some of the things in there are not true at all.
No, but they're tales.
Quite rude.
John wants to know about
it. I'm not going to.
Yeah, we're not going to go through and pick out which.
Did this really happen to you?
I think it's a lovely title, because it speaks about what a lot of people want to know always with poems, that feeling of, is it true? That's often a question that people ask when we have poets come to the salons. And we know that it's true, there's tales, and it's, and countryside, it's not the countryside you always think you find in poetry. No. So, Can you tell us a bit about coming to the countryside? Is there something? I mean, what is the, you know?
It's funny putting the pamphlet together because there are lots of poems that don't make it. So there was a series of poems called True Tales of the Countryside, and I moved to a wild cottage up on the Ludlow, on the hills above Ludlow, about 30 years ago. It was a very high cottage, and I'd moved from London to Birmingham to living in the middle of nowhere, and was shocked and had to quickly learn about what life in the countryside is like. And I remember, it's not in there, but there's a poem about keeping ex-battery hens, you know, and they're bleeding, and if they the kind of truth of living in the countryside, as soon as they stop laying, someone will neck them. You know, it's not pretty, it's not roses round the door, it's difficult and smelly, and your car gets stuck in if it snows, and but also relationships and relationship difficulties can be just as fruity or interesting as they might be in the city, I suppose. And so
that's it. I mean, there's stories of you know, there's the scene where the person in the poem is sort of running away, The poem itself is possibly the nearest to kind of having a sense of the romance of the countryside, as this the bus climbs out of a town and you get the hills and the sheep and this beautiful language, but at the same time you've got the bus stop and the graffiti, and it's, you know, it brings all these things tightly together.
Well, the countryside's like that, isn't it? You're going for a walk and there'll be a dog poo bag, in the middle of the, on the Long Mynd or something, and I kind of don't want to avoid the dog poo bag in the poems that I write, because that's real, I suppose.
Yeah,
that's a bit of dog poo bag.
And that sense of being trapped is very clear, and I think that's something that's a big thing for, the people who, there's no bus, or if there is, it's the once a day bus, that, and I think that comes out quite clearly in the poem. That we talk a lot about it actually in terms of rural isolation, don't we? But there is a really strong feeling of that, of sort of caught in a small town, avoiding Tesco, and because you don't want to see the people that know everything about
it. Small towns are great if you're fine, aren't they?
Yeah.
But if you the book is a lot about a relationship breakdown, and if you're unhappy and you see the people that go, "Hi, how are you?" and you're going, "Oh my God, it's really," you don't want to encounter those people in Tesco's, and it's hard to avoid. Presumably, a lot of you live in small towns, or you live in Ledbury.
Don't go to Tesco.
No, that's where I go. That's the poem, actually. I go to.
Shall
I read that poem?
Yes.
It's called Aldig. 20 years in this town where I brought up babies, ate in the cafes, worked on the till in Tesco. Now I slip through its streets, avoid eye contact. These days I go to Aldi, even though the kids won't eat the cereal. The aisles are empty. No Rose here, or Tina with the belly laugh and the dirty jokes, and the, how's married life treating you? And although I know which steps spring will take, snowdrops and lambs, daffodils, some unexpected sun on a Welsh hillside, cream eggs by the tills, I can no longer trust even this. This, after all, is Aldi, and it has something to do with what you did to me.
That's it. I mean, the collection has quite a strong movement through it. So it begins in this territory of very difficult relationship times, and through that, and get very much out the other side. So it's definitely you definitely have a feel of reading it that you enter some very dark places, but then you're really coming out the other side. And that's a great, I mean, it makes it a very strong read. It is something you find you want, it's wonderful to read in one, you can sit and really love that. It's a strong arc. So was that, how did that sort of emerge then?
It's, again, the process of working with an editor who because there are a lot more poems, so to decide which ones go in was quite difficult, because I had written, I mean, you know, that it had been true, and lots of the poems are about an abusive relationship, actually, and were maybe darker than the ones that have ended up here. So, but there's a kind of hint of that darkness. And they when you're writing through something like that, you need to be hopeful, and then you're all right, and then you want to write about that and come out the other side. So there is a narrative there. Mm. And when I get to that place where I'm recovered from that difficult time, then it gives you an opportunity to write about other things, you know, not just about yourself and your relationships.
Yeah.
Which is a nice thing.
So would you like to read some poems now? Are you
yes, okay.
Ready to give us a...
Okay. so this... So I think knowing that the relationship's abusive kind of... Well, so I won't read some of them, but... This poem is called New House. On the first warm days at the end of that long winter, bullfrogs came out of nowhere, found our pond and sat fat and horny, singing. I could not walk out in the dark for fear of treading their several leaf shades into the mud. Strange this house, after years in another loved place, where I could find its bones and warm pulse blindfolded. Now my dreams flood with the desperation of frogs, careless for lust. So this poem is called I Don't Know Why. Only God or his grandmother could love him the way he wants to be loved. As for me, love sits fly and spider in my chest. Not enough, he says, I must pay. Pulls open wide lips, slips in the bird, a small one. Its breast feathers and forked tail snapped over, pushed down, shoved between teeth, over tongue, stuffed, then swallowed, warm as a lover. After the bird, the spider, the fly, I got the idea, knew the score. I accepted, ate more, loved less, wondered why I stayed. I gave up hope and gentleness. Pain became hard to ignore. My aging and inertia were paid in bitterness, after dinner chocolates, freezer full of cuts of the best. I lie beside him, sick of the mess. Perhaps I'll die. Keep going. It's cheerful, isn't it? let's see. I'll move swiftly on to coming out of it, shall I think? This poem is called Chicken. Remember that it's called Chicken. It's very short. I had a strange husband once, 4 years, long enough for it to hurt me badly, so I could roll up my shirt and have the scars to show. We heal more slowly as we age, don't quite recover our old selves, falter at the edge of pavements, not even sure anymore that we want to cross the road. Get it? And then, keep going? Fridge magnets. This is called fridge magnets, sorry. Middle-aged women who have had some pain in their lives are very wise. They kindly come over with cakes and cards and fridge magnets with the wisdom written thereon. A woman is like a tea bag, stronger in hot water or some such stuff. Now my fridge magnet collection covers the whole of the fridge. The big wisdom, they say, the hard one is, you must live in the present, launch yourself on every wave, find eternity in every moment. Can't they see that I am? I shout it so that they can hear it. I don't cry because it's over, I smile because it happened. Now I am ready. They shake their heads, wrap scarves over their hair like widows at wakes and leave. I think that they will come back again. So keep going.
It's okay. It's yours. I mean, I could. We could have a little chat if you like. Would you like to?
I'll read Catalogue Lover. some of the poems are quite sexually explicit, but I won't. This is slightly.
Don't read those in this part.
Yes, in this part, because I was having fun by then. Catalogue Lover. You meet me in the lay-by by Ludlow on the A49. Is it my heart or the restlessness of the cattle, stomping and steaming piss in the back? You kiss my breasts, sucking at the nipples, whilst calves from their mothers are forced to wait for my breathing to calm. Their eyes startle and I climb down, get back into my Volvo estate. They sway away and my breasts' milk drips. I didn't have a Volvo estate. It's not literally it's about that kind of infidelity when you're a mother and you have young children, and that kind of, so it wasn't literally true. But we'll talk about that later. That's too rude. And then, finally, from that bit, this poem's called "I Am My Own Parent." I love my red shoes. All of the shoes I have loved, they are. I swing my legs against the wall, scuffing them slightly. My dad is not here to pick them up by the scruffs of their dirty necks and leave them shining in the morning. And now the arc of my swing is not quite so high, the shoes every day a little duller. At night I leave them in the hall like hope. In the morning, absent-mindedly dreaming of old loves and reading poetry until it hurts, I spring suddenly out of bed and decide to roll up my life into a fist smelling of patchouli and roses, and then unroll it. And to my surprise, it becomes a snail's yellow shell, unravelling. On and on it goes. It's gorgeous. I tap my red shoes to find I'm already home.
Lovely, that. Such a lovely image of the snail shell unravelling, and that's a really lovely poem. I mean, I think, you know, to talk about, you know, sex in poems, it's interesting because we if you've read the book, the opening poem is, you know, probably is, you know, quite, it is, it uses... a word that is almost a taboo word to use, isn't it?
Cunt word.
Yes. Even as, you know, even as a woman, we should own this word. Yes, actually. I think it was a great poem because it got me thinking. I don't know if anyone else knows the quote that for the Woody Allen line where he has an orgasm, he ejaculates and he says, oh, that's another great novel gone down the tube sort of thing. And what you're saying in the opening poem is about how you know, female sexuality is a sort of source of creativity, and which I loved. I thought it was so, I mean, did you a lot about putting it in? How does it, you know, what made you decide to use it as an opening? And did
it was difficult, that one. So it's quite, again, it's a private experience to take your poetry and show it to an editor.
Yeah.
So she wanted it there.
Yeah.
She wanted it at the beginning. And it's been in a Blood Axe anthology.
It has,
well,
hasn't it? Yeah, Hallelujah, yeah. For 50
Book Women. Yeah, and it is. It's kind of brave. It can be difficult to read it, but the poem talks about masturbation with a pen, and the pen is writing out of a kind of bitterness. You know? But and so it's not literal, but it is writing out of a kind of visceral thing about relationships and sex, and that kind of lying in bed next to somebody that you don't love anymore, and how difficult that is. And it's quite a strong, it's a strong word, and it was a strong feeling. So, you know, it was the right word. I only use it once.
I think it's so powerful because it's right at the beginning of the pamphlet. It's a bit of a shock when it I got it in the library and first opened it.
What should help us?
Well, it does remind you how words have such power.
But say what you mean. I mean, the thing about it's very clear what's being said. So
yeah.
It's not going to be by the bush.
Brilliant, Ross.
If
nobody is really offended.
I think we've built up to it enough now that you can shut your ears, you know.
I put a pen in my cunt once just to play with myself when I was at a loose end. When we were in one of those times, lying in straight lines in the dark, not touching. Long hands stroke my words to sour cream. This is what it wrote.
And that's it. There's a simplicity to it, and it's very strong. And you know, as a woman reading it, I would like to ask about writing as a woman. You know, and that feeling of when you write poems, should you try and make it a gender neutral experience for the reader, where the reader could pick it up and think, I don't know if this is a man or woman writing. And I think for quite a long time, that was kind of almost what was the pressure was to write in that way. So I feel there's something very strong in.
Well, I mean, you talked about people that have influenced or had been inspiring as writers, and that, you know, it's obviously Sylvia Plath and Anne Sexton, who both, and then also there's a poet, Evan Boland. I don't know if people have come across her, and she talks about what it is to be a woman and mother, and from the small things in life, and those are the. In fact, you know, that anthology is about poetry of the everyday, those small things, and then starting with something small, and you can talk about the universal from those small details. And I think women tend to do that more than men, maybe. Men tend to maybe talk about the bigger things and then go down to the small, and women start small and go up.
Yes, I suppose that's true, isn't it? Although, you know, sex, childbirth, it's about as big as it gets. You can write war poetry. And I feel they're just, they rest for me on the same platform of experience terms of intensity and the fact that it can change your life utterly to have that experience.
Dismissed for so long, so often. And even now, I think it's probably true that women who are writing in that way are only read by women, largely.
Yeah.
I think there's been a survey, hasn't there, that women read both men and women only read men only read men. Good for you. You're unusual, I think.
In a
really good way.
And you use tales and fairy tales a lot as well, and so there's I really loved the poem about the woman who ate the fly, because that's a verse we all learn, isn't it? And it's it's what one of those strange ones. I found it great to see it sort of reinvented here.
Yeah, I quite like using that juxtaposition of the childlike, the childish, the sing-song, and darkness, you know, and pain. You know, that juxtaposition is something that interests me. So oddly, the more difficult moments, the darker moments, tend to be dealt with with fairy tale or with metaphor, to distance myself a little bit from the actual thing. And the ones that are more true are less like that, I suppose.
Right, yes, because I mean, in a way they are very dark tales and rhymes anyway, aren't they? When you start to think about them, there's Billy Goat's Gruff, which is a kind of terrifying tale of, you know, I think, that's another one in there. So, shall we we have time for some more poems, because then we can, because the collection changes then quite bit, doesn't it? Yes, some new territory, which would be lovely to
hear. I'll read. Yes, I'm half Indian, although I don't look like it. And so there are a couple of poems about that, a little bit. I'll read this one. This is called Pink Pajama Suit. Five I must have been, just five, in my pink shiny shalwar kameez. Auntie and Karachi pinched my cheeks. Chorti Piara, little darling, like a doll, like a little blonde doll. Walk this way, try some dancing. Now you have your little blonde doll to play with. But Mummy G, I don't want to wear it to school. North London laughs too easily, makes fools of us and this mix-up family, this half-caste council estate bastard. Miss Minchin, one arm shorter than the other, knew how North London could laugh and said, knock on all six doors and tell them Miss Minchin says I must show the children my clothes from Pakistan. Mummy G, the glass on the doors is too high, and all those eyes as I turn round and round, up on teachers' tables, a little blonde doll to twist in my pretty pink pyjama suit.
Mine's nice to see you. Maybe no one will notice.
It's Nina looking. This one. My mother moves into adolescence. We've heard this before. My mother comes round with my star signs, a thin apple pie, shop bought, that no one will want, and the Daily Mail. We say thank you, the boys kiss her and go upstairs. She presents me with six things. One, you must sort out breakdown for my car, Debbie, because my English is bad. I get the leaflet, circle the policy, hand it back to her. Two, where must I... It'd be Leslie now. Just sit down.
No, that's good. Everyone take. We can all take a breath.
My mother moves into adolescence. I'm sorry. My mother comes round with my star signs, a thin apple pie, shop bought that no one will want, and the Daily Mail. We say thank you. The boys kiss her and go upstairs. She presents me with six things. One, you must sort out breakdown for my car, Debbie, because my English is bad. I get the leaflet, circle the policy, hand it back to her. Two, where must I buy new front door? I say B&Q, home base. I said that before, Mum. She waits for me to offer to measure it and take her. I put the kettle on. Three, where do I find man to fit new door? I tell her, I don't know, Mum. Look in the yellow pages. She waits for me to get the yellow pages. I get her a piece of cake with her tea. Just a thin piece, chorti chorti. She eats a large piece noisily. Four, where do I find man to fit carpet? The yellow pages, Mum. Where do I look under carpet fitters, Mum? Five, you must show me where to write email to Aileen. I show her. Six, I need you to write a letter to the estate agent. I can't do it today, Mum. You are so lazy, Debbie, she screams. All her rage spits out. She throws her mug into the sink and it shatters there. I liked that green mug with the spots from Woolworths. There is no more Woolworths. Suddenly, terribly, unbearably sad that there is no Woolworths. I tell her to go and never come back. She She came back. And then another one. This finding new love poem is a bit more optimistic. It's called He Sees Me. I like this man who, charmed by me, slips alongside and inside of me like the tongue of a dog lapping at my life. He says I rise up like 100 balloons loosed from a child's hand, beautiful, bold, even when out of sight. He says when I sleep, I sigh, and he watches me wake and smiles at the fuzz of my hair and my mind in the morning. He is charmed. I begin to charm even myself. He sees me so lovely.
What's lovely is the way it breaks down the language a bit at the end. That's what I really liked about the poem. I don't know if anyone else felt that, but that feeling of you can hear the kind of Indian in the two earlier poems is very strong, because that's what it's about. And then in that one, he sees me so lovely. He sort of seems to bring back a bit of that.
I think I have the strange syntax of my mother, actually, and I like to be aware of it and use it when I'm writing. It's, you know, it's something that I do.
Yeah.
So putting words slightly the wrong way around.
It has a real authenticity because it comes, but at the same time, it's, as a reader, it does jolt you like that, doesn't it? But also, I just love the sense that it's something so grounding that it brings you back to, say, you know, your inner self and all the different parts of it. That's how I felt about that. It's lovely. Yes, do.
This is about my current partner, Jim. I'm not sure he likes it very much. It's called Quaker Hat. All the women wanted to tip up his big, broad, black felt Quaker hat as he sat, reasonable, calm, a thinking man. So too his hat sat sorted and straight. And he said, look, let's ignore my straight hat, the straight, straight lines of me, my hat. But you have a tangle here. Your hat is tangled in your hair. You will need me to straighten and straighten. So they looked over there, those women, away, and at her hat, her bird's nest hat. And when it blew off in high winds, she was driven mad by his straight, big, broad, black felt Quaker hat, still sat straight, and would try to knock it off, tip it off. But there were tacks. That hat was tacked to his head.
Tell us a bit more about that.
Jim's lovely. He's a Quaker. Well, he was brought up as a Quaker, went to Quaker boarding school, and he's very calm. And, you know, and when you're with someone who's calm and right all the time, sometimes you're right, you know, and they just...
Tip that hat off.
And I suppose it means that there's some, you know, when you're a slightly crazy, mad woman, you know, people accept that you're going to be a bit crazy, but he doesn't look crazy, but actually there's some damage, I suppose.
Yes.
The tax.
Yes. I do feel like we ought to have the tightrope man.
Oh, really?
Because that's one of my favourites, actually.
And you can see that some of the things aren't true in this. This is called When You're Ready, the Right Man Will Come Along. Taking my cup of tea back to bed this morning, the air was still, but I could just see obliquely the telegraph wire stretched across the street, vibrating and sagging quite alarmingly. What bloody heavy sodding bird is that? I wondered. And just as I thought it, there came into view a man, all slim and toes all pointy, pole all shaky, slinking along, shoulders broad, and fine, strong thighs pinging and stretching like the wire.
He caught my eye and grinned. I nodded, but didn't want to distract him, so slid beneath the covers. When I came up for air, he had gone. Later, taking my reusable bag to the co-op, I found green sequins scattered in the street. That's, you know, when quite nice men come and ask you out, and you're kind of, no, I can't do that.
But it, you know, I think the collection is beautiful for this sense of it is a bit about growing older as a woman and growing into that, yes, which I really did enjoy. So some of the poem about when you're making the cup of the tea in your slip, that's a lovely poem for that. And because I suppose I enjoyed them myself personally, but for the feeling that it's not easy aging as a woman in our society, and that this collection for me upends that, and it's makes it a wonderful, you know, there's a lot that's wondrous in it.
Thank you. That's kind.
If I were to write a full collection, which is what you're supposed to do, isn't it, after a pamphlet, I've got a working title of Crone, which is kind of mimicking Ted Hughes' Crow, you know, and I've got this vision of this pendulous-breasted woman on the cover. But a poem's about ageing for women and how it's, you know, you can do so much and with renewed confidence, and that it's a time to celebrate, I suppose, and worry about it.
So should we hear that poem then while we're talking about
that? The one... This one is called On Sleeping Alone. It's going back to darker times, I suppose. Oh my, what big teeth you have, you letters of love, smelling of sandalwood in your special box of disappointment, and raging, not sleeping soundly, remembering that you should be the start of the happy ever after story, not the little girl swallowed whole to be saved by the woodman and his wielded axe. That's one sentence. What wolves in sheep's clothing? What granny's bonnets tied with a ribbon under their sweet little chins? Now I sit tight on the lid. Pandora was not heavy in her hips like me, not grounded by her own strong living days and nights. I am drawn instead to my own songs, to let them sing in the fresh air, love letters to myself. Wearing the blue slip with the butterflies, I take up the pretty teapot for one, the scratchy pen, the days, the life, floating, lonely, happy, and sad, the blank sheets.
Where did that poem start for you? What was it? Was there a line, or how did it?
This was kind of coming out of this unsuitable relationship, and he was a writer, he was a poet, and I had lots of poems written to me and emails, not letters but emails, and that time of kind of recovering when you kind of go back over them and they're really painful, and I just had that oh my what big teeth you have kept going through my mind tonight because they were so painful, and it's written kind of as a prose poem to start with, one big rush of a sentence of kind of shock, I think, of how it wasn't meant to be like that, and then recovery about finding your own voice.
And was it one of those poems that came out easily once it you found, or was it, how much editing did you have to do? Did it change a lot?
I'm really bad at the editing process. I love writing them, so I write them quite often in a rush, and then I should go back and edit them.
Right.
But I would rather write another one.
Yeah.
And also, it was always an excuse, because if I didn't go back and edit it, it could always be really good. If you spend ages on it and it's not, you know, it's obviously because you're not very good at it or something. But that one, yeah, they mostly come in a rush, and then if I consider them for submission somewhere other, then I tidy them up or go back to them. And,
right.
And then actually, I edit them more than I had thought I did. So I go back, move things around, line breaks and punctuation, then go back a few weeks later and do it again, and then again, probably.
Mm. Always keeping each draft so that you don't lose it, or do you tend to be a risky...
yeah. Well, I handwrite to start with, so I've always got the first draft.
Yeah, yeah. And then what about finding titles and things? Are you good at... Do you know what the name of it should be? Do you ever sort of... I mean, did that name come?
Sleeping Alone? I don't know why I called it that one, actually. I wrote that one quite a long time ago. Because it's about that in the end, and also it kind of makes sense because the blank sheets of the paper I find it quite easy to give things titles, really, and find it quite easy to write. I don't find it easy to write well, that's the trouble, so I could write loads.
so did the poem come before chicken
The title came after I'd written it, about sort of wanting to cross the road. And then I, you know, remember thinking that as you're standing on the edge of a pavement to cross the road, it makes you, and that's what it's about, isn't it? It's about being frightened of going into new relationships, being chicken about it. And I thought, you know, it's supposed to be serious, it's very sad. And then it's a joke, but I leave it anyway.
Do we have any other questions that anyone else would like to ask? Is there anything that springs to mind? Otherwise, we'll ask for a couple more poems to finish.
Poems again.
Is there anything?
I'll read two more.
Yeah. Yes, because we've got to the True Tales of the Countryside, even the title poems we haven't heard, and Small Rain. There's so many lovely poems in this pamphlet. Well, I love Small Rain.
Okay.
I love, she describes herself like this, I find very beautiful too. How long have we got?
So just two.
All right.
I'll read these two. She describes herself like this. I still choose the window seat on buses, trains and planes, and though for now all I can see is my own reflection in the glass, in the fading light, sometimes I can see beyond it. I am a mother, a field, a house. Without me, windows darken. No one else knows how to put on lights just to bring the house to life. I am each of the processes of laundry, but most of all, the unfolding of winter in winter of sheets, a sudden punch of trapped summer on white linen, heat. I have had many lovers, and I have been many times loved. When I come, I cry out, and I am the sound of the wind in the trees, and I am the rain on the roof when in love or falling. And this poem is called Small Rain. My voice. I fall asleep easily these days. Life's salt and light back through the years shortens and lengthens, projects especially shadows, and I imagine myself a 1950s baby overwrapped in a perambulator with a bouncing chassis in an autumn garden. A muffler, a plaid blanket, a shawl of crochet squares of red and orange and brown. A passing of clouds over the sun sends a chill to my fingertips, overpeeping the blanket, grasping and curled. I imagine my 1950s mother breathing Craven A smoke through her nose, red-tipped second finger taking the tobacco grain from her tongue. Feeling small rain and judging just how damp from the slow flap of the washing and the red apple flush of sleep in my cheeks, just how long.
Well, thank you very much, Deborah.